Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, it's the second month and the 21st day. It's almost over. We're almost into March.
Yeah, and it's this is a regular February, right?
I believe so. I do know that it's raining a lot.
Oh.
It's got nothing to do with the number of days. It is, yes, 28 days.
Huh. Well, let's see what's going on. A lot to talk about with regard to markets, of course. I was at the boat show. You don't want to hear about that, do you?
Yeah.
You do? All right.
Well, I never get to go to the Miami Boat Show. It's like the big show.
It was the big show. For years, it was really one of those great shows that you go to. It was the place to be. It was the only one that was really, like, you know, really warm. It was great. Here's the problem. The problem is that the Miami Boat Show is no longer the great boat show. It's now Fort Lauderdale is the great boat show. The Miami Boat Show, they moved from the Miami Beach Convention Center, which was a great location, and they moved it down to Key Biscayne. So now you got to get down to Miami. And once you're in Miami, you have to go over a bridge.
That horrible Key Biscayne bridge?
Yep, the Rickenbacker Causeway. And what happens is that, this traffic, this terrible traffic.
And once you get on that bridge, you can't turn around.
You can't go anywhere. And not only that,
you can't get off it either.
Terrible. So we parked down by Fisher Island. A friend of ours runs a marina down there. So we parked the car there, took an Uber. And then when we got to the boat show, the entrance, all the cops saying you can't go here. You can't park here. You can't let off people here. I'm like, what are you talking about? Unbelievable. So what happens is we asked the cop what to do. He said, well, you can't stop here. You're in an Uber. It'll cost you a $160 ticket. So the Uber driver's like, I'm not doing that. So we said, take down the Uber sign, stop up there. And we got out. All right. So we get to the boat show. We have I'm with a couple of people. We decided to take some sea trials that we had scheduled on a couple of different boats. So we go on the first one. Great ride. Really nice. The second one was at 12. So we get to this location. They text us and says, do you know what? Instead of coming all the way back to South Beach where the other boat was, we're going to pick you up by boat. So they picked us up in a 39-foot, brand new 39-foot contender. And we zipped over to South Beach from the boat show on down in Key Biscayne. So that was kind of cool, but oh well. And then the next thing was we had to wait around. They had some barbecue, they had drinks, whatever, and we took the boat for a ride. Then we had to go all the way back. Then we had to take a bus. We decided to go to the sail show, the sailing ships, you know, the sailing boats. Saw that. And then we had to go back to the other marina. It was like, till I got home, it was like 5 o'clock. And it was like so frustrating.
Sounds nightmarish.
Oh, I will never do that again, ever.
So you got two boat rides and
no, we got nothing. A total of I was on a 32, I was on the 32 CV with twin 300s. I was on the 39 contender with triple 300s.
That's got to be a hell of a boat.
Yeah, that was great. I was on the 32 contender, which is first ride ever on this boat. The boat was put in the water that morning. I opened up some of the cabinets, and it stunk from fiberglass. It was like just brand new. And then I was on a 35 contender. We hit about 62 miles an hour in one of the boats. It was fun. But they drove great. They were pretty impressive boats. But what, you know what was really interesting? You know, usually you go on these things, it's like a timeshare, right? You know, you go on the test ride and they sit you down. They want to talk to you about, do you want to buy the boat? They didn't ask our name. They didn't ask anything.
They didn't even get your email address?
One of them tried, but that was it. It was ridiculous. Now, I will tell you one thing. There is some new designs out. You've seen these, you know, big boats, the 60 and 70 footers. You know, the big boats, right? They have the cabins and all that good stuff, these big sport fisher boats.
Yeah.
The big thing now is oversized center consoles. So they have these, like, 57 footer was the biggest one I've seen with, like, triple 900s on it. I think it was the 900s, 750s or 900s. It was like 2,800 horsepower or something like that. Some ridiculous amount of horsepower. They sell for like 1.6 million, 1.7 million for these center console boats. They're gigantic.
What does center console mean? Is it where the steering wheel is, or what are you talking
steering
about?
Steering wheels, yeah. So it's like one of those fishing boats, like my boat. It's a center console. It's kind of got the steering wheel in the center. It's maybe got a head, or as they say, a bathroom. You just step down into a bathroom area, like a cabin, a small cabin. No cabin in the front. And on the back are outboard engines. So these boats have gotten bigger and bigger. You know how usually these big boats have the engines underneath, the propellers under the boat in this, you know, kind of towards the back?
Yeah.
And they have the engines, the diesels in there. Well, now they have all these boats want to have outboards. Because,
why?
Because trying to fix a diesel, you have to get somebody to come to the boat. Or if you have something, God forbid, really wrong.
Oh,
get
I in, see.
You just take an engine off and throw it out. So there you go.
It must look kind of weird if those engines are that powerful. They must be huge.
They're gigantic. But they have like LEDs on them that light up, and you can paint your name on them and stuff. It's once you get into that level, it's very expensive.
Mm. Well,
so, yeah. Anyway, so
I'm
let's
glad
talk,
you had fun.
Well, let's talk about markets for a second here, or for more than a second. So markets are going higher. It seems like markets continue to go higher no matter what is going on. And yeah. No matter what the news is, no matter what the Fed says, the Fed has been totally discounted. So where the Fed was the center of all the universe, you know, the Fed here, the central banks around the world, it seems like, you know, the Fed is like, okay, well, the Fed's going to raise rates, fine. They're going to do it slowly. They've kind of lost all of their you know, overall, I guess the investors have lost confidence in them. That's what it seems. Or at least we're looking for something that's not them. But you know what I was thinking? If things go bad, the Fed's going to be the one to be blamed. They're setting themselves up. Oh, they should have raised earlier. Oh, they're raising too soon. You know, they're whatever it's going to be, it's going to be the Fed is going to be the crosshairs. They've set themselves up.
Well, it's fine.
Yeah.
They won't be responsible, but this is good. You got to blame somebody.
You have to. So I was looking at some internals of the markets, the S&P 500, about 375 stocks in the S&P 500 are above their 200-day moving average. I talked about this on the Disciplined Investor podcast this week. Kind of on the high side of what we've seen over the last 2 years. And there's only about 225 stocks that were above the 200-day moving average before the election. So that's a pretty good move, you know, to see them so far. And there's also... the statistical measure, the standard deviation of stocks above their 200-day moving average is pretty high, which you would expect with a market that just won't go down no matter what.
Oh, it'll go down.
Eventually it will. Some people in the chat room are wondering, is it Dow 21,000 coming up? I mean, what are we, only 400 points away, right?
Oh, yeah, it's got to come up pretty soon. It may happen before March.
Yeah. Good. That's only
the question
week,
is, when is it going to actually definitely level off and zigzag? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be my best guess here is, and this is what I'm telling people also, is that, you know, there's this tremendous optimism over a tax plan that we have no details on. We know that. But there's a great hope on corporate taxes. And I think companies are there's no real way to tell this, but I think companies are accelerating their buybacks. If you think about it for a second, the more shares they buy back, we know that the higher the earnings. Well, what if we get all of a sudden this tax deal and corporate taxes go down to 20% or 15% or 25%? Now, all of a sudden, the earnings pop dramatically over even a smaller amount of shares outstanding. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes nothing but sense.
And now that's what we're seeing with markets. That's what we're seeing, I think, is going on here.
And so you're suspecting that then if things skyrocket, which means the Dow 23,000, 24,000 perhaps.
I have no idea. But if
and these guys will see now they have bought low and they can sell high.
That's true.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah. The big question is
how it also create a panic situation if they start all selling. And then the thing starts to tank, and then they got to get out of it as fast as they can.
With a lot less liquidity.
Right.
You know?
Yes, exactly.
With a lot less
liquidity. Would have some tax reclaims.
Yeah. So we'll have to see what happens if this border tax or protectionism of sorts will offset and put a little bit of a cold rag over this, this whole idea of, how great these earnings will be due to taxes, if it's going to cause some problems in many of the sectors. Now, crude oil inventories are swelling again. The last few weeks, we saw this massive gain in inventories, 11 million barrels, 13 million barrels, some of the biggest gains we've seen in months. However,
I looked at a chart that showed us one of the at least gasoline inventories is maybe the highest in history.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of incredible amounts of oil being pumped. One of the reasons is as oil prices go up, we're seeing that new rigs are coming online. We saw that Iran found an additional 2 billion barrels of light sweet crude in its western province of Lorestan. And Iran has already 10% of the world's oil reserves. They have about 160 billion proven barrels that are still sitting underneath the sand waiting to be pulled up. And they just found another 2 billion barrels. And that, you know what that did? You would think with all the oil prices, oil inventories moving up, you think that with the fact that we have more rigs online, more pumping going on, and there's questions about whether or not OPEC is sticking to their production limitations, that oil would go down in price. That's what you would think. We're clipping yes. We're clipping on like up to 55 here.
Yeah, I know. It went up. Well, that won't last. It won't.
All right, let's get into some of the interesting things that happened and some of the news that is going on. Some of the things I saw that was really interesting. Some anecdotes about where we are in the world of money these days. I found a very interesting list of the highest paid YouTube video performers of 2016. Have you seen any of this?
No, I know they make a lot of money, though.
This is unbelievable. So, yeah. By the way, on DH Unplugged, when the show gets posted, which will be after we're live here, you can go back to DH Unplugged, and you can just see all these charts. You can see all the things that are available that we talk about under the show notes for this particular episode, episode number 350 for DH Unplugged. You can also follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter, at The Real Dvorak, myself, Andrew Horowitz, there as well. But here's a really interesting... This is really interesting. Yeah, so Nick, you got that right. Nick asked who the number one was. PewDiePie. PewDiePie? PewDiePie? 15.
Oh, yeah, he's got...
15 yeah. million. But I think 15 he was... million, yeah. Wasn't he just asked to leave? Didn't he do something?
Well, or something. You know, a lot of these people, I think there's some number racking going on here that is not kosher. Did you watch PewDiePie?
I didn't even know what a PewDiePie was until I got this list up.
You never watch him.
No.
Nobody has. I don't know anyone who's ever watched this guy.
Is this one of those guys that makes stupid videos?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of women. I'm surprised that a couple of them aren't on this list that I know have big numbers. But there's a lot of these. Yeah. They make $1 million or more.
Smoosh.
Although I have to relate myself back to... that Coney, remember that Coney 2012 thing?
Yeah.
And how those numbers just skyrocketed. All of a sudden, he's got 12 million views and then it's 20 or something. It just went up like a rocket. I just don't believe some of these numbers being real. I think a lot of it is bots.
It's bots, but you know what? It's good for everybody, isn't it? Right. So we the people are subjected to a barrage of advertisements in videos or video pop-ups with advertisements or advertisements without videos or anything you want to talk about, advertisement, advertisement, advertisement. And there is no benefit for anybody to police this because we don't care. We're just going to click in a couple of seconds and then go forward and we're just used to it. It's kind of like part of the sequence right now. You get a video, it pops up, you got an advertisement. You say you can stop the advertisement in 3 seconds. You click it, you're done. So what's happening is that the performers and the host companies, whether it's Google or Facebook or whoever it is else it is, they have no desire to police any of this. The only ones that would have desire would be the advertiser, but they don't seem to care.
No, they don't seem to care.
They don't seem to care at all. So the number one highest paid YouTube stars in 2016.
You have to think about, you have to back up a second because I just thought of something about that. you also have to realize that the advertisers, it's not the advertisers, but the advertising agencies, the big advertisers that buy these huge buys, millions of dollars, they don't do that work. It's done by the agencies. And the agencies get paid a commission based on what the total results are. In other words, if they sell $5 million worth of ads, they get more money than if they sell $2 million worth of ads. So it's in their best interest to let these numbers go skyrocketing too. If the base advertiser, the Procter & Gamble, whoever, Ford, General Motors, whoever it is, that's got the big dough and they're throwing 10% of their earnings at advertising no matter what, they're the ones who have to put a stop to it. And they don't seem to care either, because I don't think they're being talked to honestly.
We're all being ripped off from one way or another. Everybody's making money on the back of everybody.
Well, it's fishy, let's put it that way.
Well, one of the things is I looked at like this Miranda Sings, which is supposedly a comedy thing. It's this horrible singer, this comedian, she really can sing, but she can't sing. And it's just crazy. But I also looked up the amount of money to be made by YouTube advertising. That the per thousand, the money per thousand of advertisements has dropped precipitously over the last few years.
Yeah, but what's it down to is still probably high.
It's like I think 35 cents for per thousand or something ridiculous.
35 cents a thousand?
It's something ridiculous. In order to make money, I was calculating you need like I think it was something ridiculous. It was
So that even makes it more ridiculous that PewDiePie, who gets a percentage of that, 35 cents, can make $15 million.
Yeah, I don't know if it was 35%. It was something like
that. No, I know that. I've heard 25 cents on some of this wholesale advertising.
Yeah, it's per thousand views.
Some people sell for 10 bucks. There's, you know, generally speaking, it's about 20 for, you know, really good targeted stuff. Some people want more. Okay. Mm.
So anyway, take a look at that. I'm sure you can look it up on the web and find out exactly what the range is. If you just look up, you know, what's the payout. And then they have to split that with YouTube and various other places. But still, $15 million.
No, I think $15 million, isn't that net?
That could be net, which means it could be 20-something million. 25 million.
It'd probably be more like 30.
Yeah, could be a split 50-50 just for views. Now, I read a fascinating piece. You know, this whole fake news thing. This whole fake news thing, it's getting under my skin a little bit, by the way. So, President Trump has been fake news, the fake news media, the fake news this, the fake news that, everything's fake news, right? Everything is whole fake news. Now, I was thinking about this. I was thinking, what does fake news mean? Now, fake news is a new phrase, a relatively new phrase, that has been brought into the mainstream these days, right? But what was it? It was all about link bait. Right, it was all about getting people to go back to advertising again. By the way, but it was all about this fake news and all this crap, and it was sensationalistic, and it would bring in people that to click on something, and they get paid by the advertisers. And it was kind of this. It was fake. It was lies, but it was fake. You follow what I'm saying? It wasn't even a twisting of truth in there. It was all meant to bring your eyeballs in and to get people to pay for advertising. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think at the end, when you all said and when the thing's finished, when you've added it up, it's advertised. At some point, somebody makes some money. Right. They're happy.
So now I started thinking that President Trump, the way he's using the fake news, he's using it as liars and misinterpretation of the truth. It's a little bit different. It's a subtle difference, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, no, as far as he's concerned, any story that is not to his liking is fake news.
Yeah, exactly. He had a fascinating tweet tonight. He said something to the effect of all of these protests that you're seeing against this and that are being brought by liberal, what do you say now? The liberal lobbyists or something like that. Sad. They're being organized by the liberal side.
Sad.
I'm like, wait, who's going to be organizing this? Is if it the liberal side of the protest, who is it just going to be? Some people just happen to come together on a street corner one day at 3 o'clock. There has to be an organization behind it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of organizations.
So he's saying that, oh, how sad that this is happening, that there is an organization creating these things. You know what I'm saying? like trying to make it look like that the protests aren't for real.
Well, it would depend.
It's crazy.
Well, they're definitely established. There's groups that just have. I think there's a lot of people that don't have much to do and they like to just protest anything. I don't know what the protests are accomplishing.
Yeah, here's somebody, the actual tweet. The so-called angry crowds in home districts of some Republicans are actually, in numerous cases, planned out by liberal activists. Sad. Like I said, who else is going to plan this if it's not somebody planning, a planner of these things?
That's what we're talking about. Definitely not Republican activists that are doing it. Yeah, of course that's who it is, but I don't know.
What's the difference?
What you're deriding him for is pointing out the obvious.
Yeah, the total obvious.
Yeah, of course they're put together by these guys. You wouldn't have these. They're all a bunch of Democrats. What's happened, and it's kind of amusing, is, you know, they all have these hot shots. They all want to do their town hall meetings, you know, be part of the, town hall meetings. So they do these town hall meetings, and these little activist groups find out about them, and they raid them, and then they make a big fuss, and they drive the guy off the stage. It's got to be great fun.
Yeah.
So these guys have to cancel these town hall meetings.
Yep. Well, Snapchat IPO is coming out soon. They're doing their roadshow right now. And
what do you think?
What do I think? I just can't figure out if Twitter can't make it with the one-to-many, with many news streams, with information and then links to other things. So in other words, the biggest RSS feed in the world concept, right? You know, that is brought together in a groupthink kind of way. I don't understand how Snapchat is going to be able to be, while it's going to be used, I just don't understand how they can have that much advertising on there from an individual basis. You know, I have 10 people in my Snapchat group. I don't know what else can drive massive sales along the way and revenue. I just don't understand.
I think there is nothing. I think this is get out of town. They're going to dump this sucker, this product on the public. They're going to make a ton of money. A bunch of rich guys are going to pop out of it. And then it's just going to kind of get, it's just a fad anyway, as far as I can tell. You take a picture of yourself and put a dog nose on it. I mean, what's the big deal?
That's funny, though. It is funny, but.
Well, it can be funny. I'm not saying that. It's not funny, but at some point, how funny is it? I mean, how many pictures of yourself with a dog nose on are you going to take before you get tired of it? It just seems like a dead end to me.
Yeah, and already there's competitors. WeChat, which is owned by Facebook, is now coming on, as they call it, with a disappearing picture message. You know, that's all it is. It disappears. Who knows? You know, you can't get it back after a certain period of time. Even the things you put in my story, you know, they basically dissolve and disappear after a while. It is fun. It is definitely a fun thing, but I can think of many things along the way that have been fun. For example, Snapchat was trying to have even more fun. So they put out these spectacles. Remember we talked about the glasses?
Yeah.
With the cameras? The ready sales are fading away.
Of course.
You know, the 1,000 people that thought it'd be cool to walk around with these stupid looking glasses, Snapchatting all day. Like, who has time for this crap? Except for the people that maybe, listen, if you're a professional skateboarder, or you're somebody else in sports and you want to live stream essentially, or at least, you know, create this kind of, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, jumping off a cliff.
Yeah, but how many people?
And it's less every day if you think about it.
It's ridiculous. I've heard more people recently saying that they're really disgusted with Facebook. Have you heard this lately?
Yes, my wife.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of done with this whole thing. I keep it so I can see a funny thing here and there. There's a couple of funny little things on it, you know, some comedians are there. I like to see some cool music every once in a while. I saw a very funny a video of Mr. Bean playing a drum set, an invisible drum set. That was funny.
But you get all that stuff on Twitter.
Yeah, so you can find that if you want to follow those people.
Says it's the politics that's getting her down.
Yeah, the politics are bad. A lot of people I know have not even, they decided, and they wrote posts about this. I'm not doing the politics thing anymore. Maybe they'll stop doing the dog posts too. That'd be really great. All right, let's talk about the fact that your job is going to be extinct shortly. Not yours, not mine, but people's jobs. Now, we talked about this probably starting 5 years ago, the whole idea that robotics and artificial intelligence will be taking jobs, but nobody was talking about it. Remember this? Nobody. No. They said jobs will be fine. You make technology and you make technology into something that can really provide a benefit and replace people. But all that does is create new jobs in the technology area. And I said, until that job that they're doing in the technology area can be taken over by somebody else, or there's no more need for people. We've talked about this, right?
Of course.
So here's some interesting, now all of a sudden, we're starting to get this backdrop of where the problems potentially lie. First of all, three of the world's 10 largest employers are already replacing tens of thousands of their workers with robots. Foxconn, which manufactures like the Apple devices and Google and their various Amazon devices, which is the 10th largest employer in the world, have already replaced 60,000 workers with robots.
Yeah, well, that was expected. Yep. I went to China in, let's see, 1995, I think, and maybe the first time, or 94. And we went and we visited the keyboard manufacturing plant for Acer had in the mainland, in Suzhou. Mm-hmm. And they were paying at the time, this has changed because it's gone up a lot, but they were paying people $25 a week or $100 a month to do work in this keyboard factory. The place was clean. It was immaculate. It was really a nice place, but you know, they weren't paying anybody anything. And even back then, this is 20 years ago, the guy says to me, we're going to replace these people with robots. When the robots become competent enough to be able to do this job. And I said, you're only paying him $25 a week now. What's the deal? Oh, he says the robots will be cheaper. And he says, more importantly, even if the robots aren't cheaper, there'll be less mistakes made. The people are always making mistakes.
that's the problem, right? You'll need a few people fixing and oiling them and reprogramming them and shuffling them in and out. But basically, you still have a whole robot workforce.
Yeah.
Now, Walmart, which is the third largest global employer. Ah, there was a great news piece out today on Walmart that their online sales. Oh, this is so fantastic. Their online sales were up 29%. Let me tell you what the problem is. People are so stupid. They buy into any of these crap headlines, okay? What did Walmart recently do in a big purchase? Do you remember?
No.
They bought a company. They bought Jet. Remember Jet?
Yeah.
They bought Jet. What does Jet do? They
online
are
online sales.
Online sales. That was going to rival Amazon, right?
Yeah, everything's going to rival Amazon.
Okay. But however they are or they are not going to, they put Jet in there and were so excited their online sales are up 29%. I mean, they damn well better be if you just bought a company that all it does is online sales.
Yes.
I mean, come on. People are not thinking. Everybody's all excited about this. 29%. Walmart wants to replace its warehouse stock checkers with flying drones that could scan miles of shelves in a fraction of the time. The U.S. Department of Defense, which is the number one global employer, by the way, is already flying the world's largest fleet of unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, in Middle East conflicts. They have 7,362 RQ-11 Ravens in operation. 57% of the jobs across 34 OECD countries are at risk of automation. There's a report we'll talk about in a second with Citigroup in Oxford. And the World Economic Forum has predicted that 5 million jobs can be destroyed globally by 2020. So.
That's spit in the bucket. They could be able to go bigger than that, but okay.
They could. Stephen Hawking, we know him, is also looking at the potential for jobs lost for robotics. He's a nice guy. I kind of don't think he is any sided per se. He says the automation of factories has already decimated jobs in traditional manufacturing, and the rise of artificial intelligence is likely to extend the job destruction deep into the middle class, while only the most caring, creative, and supervisory roles remaining, which I think we meet that criteria. We're very caring and creative, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We stay. So now the report that was recently out about a year ago by Citibank in partnership with the University of Oxford was finally put out. They're predicting a 47% of U.S. jobs are at risk of automation. I thought that was pretty high.
With all these jobs going away, when you, let's go back to what Hawking says, the only caring, meaning I think he means like nursing and doctors.
Correct.
Creative, which could be what we do, or supervisor, supervising jobs. Who are they going to supervise?
I guess they're the caring people.
That's got to go way down in the numbers.
They supervise the robots. That's what you just said before.
Yeah, but they don't really. There's not the robots don't need that much supervision.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that those are at risk too. Everything's at risk, pretty much.
Everything's at risk. I mean, I don't know if I have a chart of this. Maybe I put this as a chart. I don't think I have this. Let's see if this is the chart. No, there's a different chart that I saw today that I was going to put up, but I didn't. Again, on DH Unplugged, you can check out all these charts. But it was the decline of certain industries over the last, 30 or 40 years. And you look at like writers and journalists. I mean, just write down. And you have, because, bloggers have taken that over and other sources have taken that over. And,
right.
So creative is
podcasters.
Yes.
Podcasters.
Yes, of course. Everybody, by the way, has a podcast now. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Everybody's got a podcast.
You can go listen to some of these podcasts, and I guarantee you won't be able to listen to two of them, if even one of them.
Yeah, their sound is terrible. They have nothing to say. And, they're not good at it. I mean,
and they're in competition with what I, which I call the repurposed radio shows. I mean, NPR has a podcast. It's just repurposed stuff that they do on NPR. It's not really a podcast. It's just a distribution mechanism for their show, the original show.
Yeah, so, but it's only going to get worse. You know why? Because Curry is coming out with a podcast in a box.
Yeah, I know he is.
Right? Now everybody can do it. You can do a podcast right in your own home. So now here's the thing. So we have 47% of U.S. jobs are at risk of automation. In the U.K., 35%. China, 77%. Now here's this chart that I wanted you to see. The one that says robot jobs, probabilities. This is a research piece that was put out. Probabilities of automation. Number one, loan officers. That makes kind of sense, right?
Well, there's no such thing anymore. It's all done by a computer. You send your paperwork in and then you magically be told no.
Yep. Receptionists and information clerks. I wonder if a lot of people listening even know what like a copy boy was.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Actually, a lot of people don't know what a receptionist is.
Right. Or pay
telephone. They still have them, though. The good companies still have receptionists.
Paralegals.
They do a better job than a robot.
And paralegals and legal assistants, same thing. I mean, back in the day, I remember if I wanted to type a letter. So what we'd do is we'd handwrite the letter. We'd hand it off to somebody. She would put it into a typewriter, like the brother or whatever typewriter, and put a carbon copy thing behind it, and then type it for you. And then you get it back and you can copy it and stick it in a file somewhere. These days, most people, a lot of people, even attorneys, I mean, myself, I type all my own stuff, not all my own stuff, but a lot of stuff. You type your own articles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah.
Word processor. Why wouldn't I not do it?
I understand that. Retail salespeople, 92%. That's going to be good, actually. Taxi drivers and chauffeurs, 89% odds of automation. Personal financial advisors, 58%. Oh, man.
That's you.
That's pretty ugly, huh? Reporters and correspondents, only 11%. That's kind of you.
Yeah, kind of.
Musicians, that's definitely you.
That doesn't take into account the low pay that is turning out because of all these people that do that kind of work for free.
Yeah, here's one that's very concerning. Cooks, fast food cooks. Doesn't that bother you a little bit? 81% of probability of their jobs disappearing.
Well, they have these mechanisms now to make a pretty good cup of coffee with a machine.
Oh, okay.
And I suppose, if you think about it, the Burger King with that little conveyor belt that goes, takes the burger meat, and puts it over, runs it over a flame, top and bottom, and then the burger flops off like a food manufacturing operation. I suppose you could put together a burger with a robot. Robot could do it.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
I'm reminded now of modern times by Charlie Chaplin.
Ah.
where he's sitting there on the assembly line, and he's just doing these nuts and bolts. He's just, you know, he's working there, and then the robot comes along to feed him, and they kind of lock him down so he can't move, and then the robot comes up and starts throwing, you know, soup in his face and trying to wipe him off, and then the thing goes kind of nuts and starts banging him.
Yeah,
it's actually quite a very funny scene.
It's the old version of Sleeper. Definitely. Yeah, with the Orgasmatron. Remember that?
Yeah, the Orgasmatron, of course.
Anyway, take a look at this particular list. I think it was pretty interesting what's going on. Now, moving right along, Swedish police say riots broke out overnight in a predominantly immigrant Stockholm suburb after officers were suspected of doing something with somebody with arresting people with drug charge. What's going on with Sweden? And what did Trump know when he said what he said on Saturday evening? Oh, did you see what happened in Sweden? Did he know actually something maybe is going on?
You have to wonder about this because he made a comment as though something had happened. Nothing happened until after he gave the speech.
Exactly. Like he was privy to something.
Kind of creepy. Yeah. Nobody's really pointed that out, but I find it to be odd.
Yep. And then last little note on around the world. I don't know why this fits in here. Maybe it doesn't. But hate crimes in New York have doubled in 2017. I guess doubled in the same period as last year. Specifically against us Jews. I don't know what we did with pissing anybody off.
I don't know what you did either. What'd you do?
I don't know. We pissed people off somehow.
Schumer.
Oh, maybe. All right. Let's talk about Tesla for a second. Do you know that it's now worth more than Nissan?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And is now very close to the valuation of its biggest rivals in America, Ford and GM, by market value. Now it's the big three. Now take a look at this. This is Tesla's valuation. There's a chart again on DH Unplugged. Go over there and check this out. This is looking at the valuation of Tesla as compared to the valuation of GM and Ford. Excuse me. You notice that GM and Ford pretty much flatlined or ever so slightly came down. I mean, at the high in 2014, Ford was worth about $70 billion, GM $55 billion or so. And there's still a little bit there. I mean, Ford came down a bit. Ford's at $49 billion now. GM came up. It's worth $55. Tesla's worth $43.7 billion. I mean, it's almost the same value as Ford. And I must say.
Yeah, and they make three cars.
They
sell not that many.
Not that many. And now they own another company, of course.
And the cars are all glued together, which is the thing that bothers me the most.
And they have, but they do have the batteries, and they have now these shingles for your roof. Those look pretty cool.
Yeah, they have the batteries.
And they have also the solar energy company. But here's what's really interesting. I thought this was really interesting. The next chart, which is Tesla's price target, shows look at this. It shows Tesla's differential of its price target placed on the stock by analysts that cover the company compared to the actual price. So what this does is it takes the current price of Tesla, it subtracts out the average price of the target price from major players out there, whether Goldman or JP or whoever's putting price targets on, new record low differential, meaning that on average, target prices for Tesla are, let's say, 220 and the stock's trading at 260.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to go long on Tesla in today's show.
Really?
Momentum.
Momentum, but this is showing you exactly the opposite, right?
Yeah, this is not a momentum chart.
No, it's just showing you that the price spread,
shows you that these guys are just
Bullshit.
You know. Well, no, actually what it shows you is that because it's not going this way and momentum's taking it up past Ford and GM, I think it's going to carry. It's at an all-time high. It's got to go higher.
Yeah, pretty amazing. I think the earnings are coming out this week, I think. I think it's this week.
Yeah, it's a good gamble.
It's a pretty good gamble.
But it is a gamble.
Yeah. If you go long, I'll go short.
Okay.
Let's see here now. So take a look at that over on DH Unplugged, like I mentioned.
We'll both get wiped out in 2 weeks, so it doesn't make any difference. Yeah,
exactly. You can follow John C. Dvorak again on Twitter. You can also listen to John and Adam Curry on the No Agenda Show, the best podcast in the universe, which I think, if I did listen to this correctly a couple of weeks ago, somebody's claiming they have the best podcast in the universe, and they had it first.
Well, we've had it for years, so they didn't have it first because they just did it like recently, and we just bitched about it. We left, dropped it.
I think it's just sue them. Sue them.
Don't care. Everybody knows.
Yeah, there's got to be an attorney out there that would want to take this case, one of your loyal
Why?
Fans, just for the fun of it.
Yeah, there's better cases.
Yeah. You can follow, anyway, you can listen to that on Thursdays and Sundays. And of course, you can listen to that either live or via podcast. You can listen to it over and over because it's so worthwhile to do. And of course,
some people do actually listen to it two or three times, which is, since it's a 3-hour podcast, generally they're 2:45 at least. I find that outrageous.
If you listen to DH Unplugged and No Agenda and The Disciplined Investor once per day, that pretty much take up a good chunk of your day. That's 5 hours right there. That would be.
If you have a long commute, it pays off.
Yeah. Let's see here. All right. I mentioned if you love the show. I didn't mention if you love the show. What should they do?
Well, they could donate to the show. They can give us some, if they make any money from our tips after they talk to their investment advisor. They could help us.
Yep.
You know, all kinds of different ways.
Yep. We'll talk about this. We have plenty of people in the good amount of people in the chat this evening. It's kind of catching on, I think.
Mm.
What it's worth. All right, let's go on to talking. What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about Netflix?
Well, I want to talk about the winner of the Netflix thing because I didn't get my bid in time, even though the bid I was going to send was $142.15.
Is that right?
No.
Come on. Well, here's what's interesting. Warren S. Warren. Now, Warren S. amazingly
hit it, nailed it.
Hit it on the penny.
Yes.
On the penny. That's pretty impressive. And
that's really, that means we have a lot of people that are jumping in and we're getting some actual hits. It's fantastic. And the runner up came within 4 cents.
Yep. Now, Warren, if you're listening, you did not contact us about your shirt size. We do hope you're small right now until you get the next batch in. But, Warren S. is the winner and will be put into the Closest to the Pin Cup, which is the annual event. There's a second annual, which we'll have all the winners. And each and every week or so, we will have a new name. Now, we don't have something for the next one. Do you have any particular stock that you want to, anybody thinking of a particular name that has a lot of appeal? That would be very.
Well, I'm looking at Tesla.
We had Tesla before.
Oh, we did do Tesla already.
We did Tesla. What other names?
Something old-fashioned.
Something old-fashioned.
Like Lockheed Martin? Let's do Lockheed Martin. We haven't done that, have we? No,
we haven't done Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin.
Boeing would be interesting.
Yeah, we could do that. Or what else is old?
Let's do Boeing.
Boeing.
Yeah.
Boeing. They'll see a lot of volatility due to the Trump factor here.
Yes, I think so.
BA. We'll have that. Up next week, or
they've already dropped the price on the 747 for the president.
Yep.
So it could go either way.
Yeah.
All right. Profits being thrown away.
There are a lot. Well, it was. He's not going to put up with anything over, you know, $4 billion, and they came in right under $4 billion.
Yes.
A couple hundred million. Amazing how just a couple little things like that they could just be like, done. You know, so anyway, you'll go over to DH Unplugged, and on the right side of the site, you'll see the Close to the Pin competition for Boeing, which will start in a couple of days from now, and add your price guess for that, and it'll be a couple of weeks out. So anyway, we'll get that going. Also, just to note that once again, we had a little bit of a stagger there, but the old codgers have pulled ahead by a few percentage, a little half a percentage point. From the millennial portfolio, that's good to see. And
yeah, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, everything's moving up. It really doesn't matter. Just
what do you want to be in? What's moving up the most?
Yeah,
it'll come down the fastest. But that's beside the point.
All right, let's talk about sanctuary cities. You want to talk about that?
Like, if you want.
Well, 61% of the 11 million undocumented immigrants live in just a few cities. I just thought this was another fascinating graphic. So it's interesting that, maybe not interesting, but.
Well, wouldn't you want to live at a place that's, you know, you feel at least a little safe? You're going to get deported.
Or you want to live in a place If you are an immigrant, don't you want to live amongst your other immigrants?
Yeah. So you want to, yeah, of course.
You know, it's the old, just, you know, the Lower East Side that used to have, you know, the Jewish people, and now it's all the hipsters are there. You had the Chinatown and Little Italy, and now this is Chinatown and ultra small, ridiculously one block Little Italy.
Yeah, it's lost.
Chinese have surrounded it.
Well, that's kind of what happened in San Francisco. We have an Italian section that's mostly Chinese all around it. There is a, it's a little bigger, I think, than Little Italy, though, which has really shrunk.
Little Italy was the best. And the Feast of San Gennaro every summer, or towards the spring or fall, I guess the fall, or the end of the summer. Love that. Love that with the fried Zeppelis. Mm-mm-mm. Anyway, you ever have a Zeppeli?
No.
It's like a little dough ball. Very light. It's kind of, it's like a puff pastry-ish kind of thing, and they just
fried dough. Is what it is.
Fried dough. Yeah, fried dough with powdered sugar. Then they started doing some weird stuff like fried Oreos and fried cheesecake, and now they got things like fried butter.
Fried butter is my favorite. This fried butter's delicious.
Yeah. the biggest areas. There's a great chart here. It shows New York, New Jersey, Newark, Los Angeles, Long Beach, Anaheim, Houston, Dallas, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach. These are all that have the highest level of immigrants.
No, there must be I guess it would be what kind of immigrants. You got Puerto Rican. That's not illegal.
Well,
what kind of immigrants? What illegal immigrants?
Unauthorized immigrants.
Now, well, you can.
Let me ask you a question. How do you know if they're unauthorized and you can't find them and you can't count them and all that? How do you know they're there? I mean, is it that people, that their visas expired?
I think they do statistical analysis. I think there's some NGOs around that do this. I have no idea. I do know there's a lot of Mexicans in the Chicago, Naperville, Elgin, Illinois.
But again, if it's unauthorized immigrants, I don't know. I guess it has to do with their visa running out. It's not like...
It just doesn't surprise me, though, that some of these places, because you get San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward, Las Vegas and Henderson, which are areas where you have a lot of where there's a lot of Mexicans and Latinos and Chicanos and people that are true citizens that would drag up some of their buddies. It seems to be more in that area than you would get in Chicago, but no, or Washington D.C., which is higher,
mm-hmm.
or even Atlanta.
Atlanta's up here.
It's high. Meanwhile, San Jose, which is a Latino area for all practical purposes, Sunnyvale, is way down. Some of these numbers are doubtful.
All right.
Or Austin, which is in Texas.
Yep. In sad news, maybe it's happy news. I'm not sure here. San Francisco has officially voted to ban the sale of non-rescue dogs and cats at pet shops as a part of a concerted effort to eradicate inhumane puppy breeding operations in the city. First of all, inhumane and puppy breeding, it doesn't go into the same sentence, I don't think. It's animal cruelty. It's not inhumane. Is it?
Well, the puppy mills is what they're talking about. I don't know why San Francisco has any, because most of them are out in Sonoma County or someplace like that. I don't know.
So
they're just nuts over there running, let's face it.
Exactly. So now there's not going to, right. So now you're going to have, they're going to outlaw this. Oh, they did vote. So I don't know where you can get, you have to go now. People will just go to people that want to buy these pure breeds. They want to pay $2,000-$4,000 for a dog, which I don't understand.
You have to buy them from a breeder anyway. You're not going to buy them at a shop.
Right. Exactly. Anyway, let's talk about some of the leftovers from last week with things that we didn't talk about, some things that we have to talk about. Seems that Amazon loses a tremendous amount of money on their shipping.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So it reached an all-time high in 2016, $7.2 billion of losses.
Shipping.
Shipping, yep. Mm-hmm. It's the difference between what Amazon charges customers for shipping and what the company spends to get those items to customers. So if you're a Prime member, they'll add up all the Prime accounts that there, and then they'll take that and they'll add, because that's the shipping cost, right? And then they'll add up all the actual charges that you get charged if you are to ship something if you're non-Prime member. And then what they'll do is they'll subtract out what they actually spent to come out with this number, which is $7.2 billion. Pretty
amazing. So what you're saying is that at some point in the future, this bonanza of free shipping that we're all getting, because we are, let me buy a pencil, and here comes the pencil, free shipping. Let me buy a gun safe. Here comes a truck coming up and they drop off a gun safe, free shipping. That's going to end. I mean, it's going to be, I don't know if it'd be as bad, but it's going to remind me of what happened with Federal Express. And you noticed this and you talked about it on the show, where I used to be able to send an overnight letter for $5 or whatever it was. And now it's like $50.
Oh, terrible. People still do it, I guess.
Yeah, they do, but it's less and less.
Yeah. Well, especially with email.
I used to get those all the time, and now I'm getting once in a while I get something from Amazon through Federal Express, but I'm sure that deal is – there's deals being done. Federal Express does do deals, but just an average schmo wants to go to the FedEx office and send an overnight letter, you can't afford to. You have to go to the post office to do a two-day.
Well, these days, if you have to send a document to somebody, first of all, nobody wants to wait. So you send an encrypted document to somebody through some service that's out there. They can print it at their own office, and then they can scan it and either maybe send it back an original if you need it that badly, or do a DocuSign or some other kind of security-based signature system.
Which those things are all legal.
Yeah. Stupid. But now there's also more losses in shipping of the United Postal Service. Now, you've debunked this many times, supposedly, but $200 million it lost during the year-end holiday season.
This is nonsense.
Yeah, they also, the results also reflect continued erosion in the delivery of first-class mail as well as expensive mandates for funding of its retiree health care obligations. We know that one of the biggest problems many companies have, and in particular civil service and these kind of companies, where they have someone who starts working for them at 20 years old, retires 30 years later, now they're 50, and now they have guaranteed health care for the rest of their life plus possibly pension. This is costing these companies a lot of money. This is another reason why companies these days are more profitable, because they shifted the whole onus of retirement and to a degree maybe your health care to the employees. Remember when that happened with the 401k plans? Now you're in control of your own, your own destiny.
Yeah, your own stupid destiny.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the 30 years. Pack your box and take your 401k. You didn't max it out. Well, sorry. That was really a big. If you think about that for a second, that is a very big bonanza for companies when this all took place. Because in the old days,
they had the excuse, "Hey, we can't afford this. This is a jip. We can't do it. We can't afford it."
Yep. Yeah. And in the old days, people would work for somewhere, and then the place would. I mean, government still does this in other places too, but. And now it's abused, of course, people living a lot longer. So you work for the government, for example, for 30 years. You retire on your highest last 3 years in service, maybe at 80% of your highest last three. You're now 54 years old. You go get a job somewhere else. You make just as much money.
Yeah, you double dip. It's fantastic.
and then you even possibly retire from that job 15 years later. With a nice 401k plan or some other kind of, that they funded, and then you go work somewhere else.
You could.
And then, of course, on top of that, you collect Social Security.
Right. That's working the system, and that's what you should do.
That's what you should do.
The problem is these deals don't work anymore. Right. You can't work to 30 years and expect the company to even be in business. My advice to people who are young and want to retire is to start buying real estate.
Is that it?
Yeah, just keep buying real estate and ratcheting. You end up with a lot of property.
But how do they pay for it in the meantime? They rent it out?
No, you have to be working for a living. You could rent it out. You could become one of those guys. That's a lot of work. But yeah, you rent it out or you just buy raw land. There's a lot of things you can do. But real estate's the only real thing of any real value. Everything else is bull, as far as I'm concerned anyway.
The only problem is you go through a lot of ups and downs and eventually... But if you're in a good area, you know, you can
do a little research. I mean, you just can't be an idiot. But if you're in a decent area, I mean, like if you, I don't care who you are, if you would have bought, say, 30 years ago, you would have bought in to a house in Palo Alto. Just got in, minimum down payment, small house. And you keep that thing. The thing's worth $1-3 million by the time you retire. Sell it, and then you can live off of that. It's going to be a much better deal than a 401k.
I would tend to agree that it's part of a diversification process, and yes, it can be good. Sometimes you have to wait for a long time. Listen, I bought a house in Lake Placid, Florida. I have a beautiful house there. It's I have a white sandy beach. I mean, it's like powdery sand. I have half an acre, or almost a little over that, two-thirds of an acre, I guess. I bought it for $350, put $150,000 into it, and now maybe I get $350.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, my theory only works if it works. Yeah, you could go the other way. It's true. Mm-hmm. And Florida is very sketchy, I have to say.
Yeah. All right, and before we get to the stocks, one more thing here. A quick listener question. And my question is for you and John. I'm a dude named Ben, but a different type, i.e. software developer. I work in the financial services industry. What is your thought on the impact of the upcoming bond market collapse on fixed income divisions at major banks? I'm looking for technology jobs, and there seems to be some good opportunities in the fixed income technology area, but I don't want to leave my stable job for something that may go down the drain later this year. By the way, really like your show. Looking forward to yours and John's comments. That's all yours.
Well, I don't absolutely know yet what to do myself, to be honest about it. And I don't see that working. No, if there's going to be a bond collapse, you're probably going to need guys like you to keep those machines running or work on some software. I have no advice. Zero.
Okay.
But I don't see that you're going to be screwed by going into that business.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Fixed income technology, whatever that means to you or whatever it means to anybody, is a great business. And the bond collapse isn't going to hurt it.
And we talked about this earlier.
Probably make it better.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier that the jobs that will be lost to technology, some of them are in the financial services area. So that is possibly an area that companies will be looking to enhance their overall, their business structure in terms of technology. And that could be very good.
Yeah, I don't see that would be a problem. The problem is holding bonds, which has got nothing to do with what you're talking about.
Yep. TW in this chat room is asking, what is this bond collapse all about? You got to listen to the last several discussions from going back about a year and some of the discussion about what will happen with this.
Right. Yeah, and we did a more recent thing, but we've been talking about it for a year. Yep. We actually more than that, because we started talking about it over a year ago when that hot shot, I can't remember his name ever, came out.
And Gundlach. Gonna be this, Gundlach.
Yeah. There's going to be a bond collapse. And everyone, there's going to be a bond collapse. This was like 2 years ago, I guess. And it never happened, of course. And his comment was, when are you going to know it? What are you going to do? How are you going to know? He says, you'll know it when you see it, which we haven't seen. But since then, the General Accounting Board principles or General Accounting Standards or something have a new edict out, and everyone's going to adopt it, which means you got to take those unfilled liability. What do they call unpaid liabilities? There's a term for it.
Unfunded
liabilities in the municipalities have to be put on the books as such, right on the profit and loss statement for the cities, and it's going to make the whole country look. It's gonna be bad. It's gonna cause a problem because people are gonna say, "Well, wait a minute, I didn't know this town was broke."
Yeah.
And by the way, with or without those numbers, Portland, Oregon is broke. So just thought I'd mention it in Portland.
Before we get to the stock, do you want to mention what you're writing for PC Magazine?
Yeah, I'm writing about these new bills, the right to repair. Right to repair.
What does that mean?
Right to repair. There's a big law they're trying to pass in Nebraska, and I think about 12 or 13 other states are trying to do this right to repair, which means that if you wanted to repair your iPhone yourself, you have to be able to get the parts from Apple and you have to be able to get the books on how to repair the phone. Right now, you can't do that.
And this is because I own the iPhone in theory, so therefore I should be able to do what I want with it.
No. See, the problem is underneath all of this is licensing. And I explained this in detail on the in the column. And it really is not about Apple or iPhone. Apple just knows that it's problematic for them down the road if these laws get passed. It's really about John Deere.
John Deere.
You cannot work on a John Deere tractor because for the last few years, the John Deere, like the combines, those big giant things, you're up two stories in the air and you're chopping down a whole field. Those are actually licensed.
So you can't work on it? You have to have, what, a certified John Deere mechanic?
You have to be, yes, because because they're so software dependent on how they work that they don't want people dicking around with them. And it's become an issue because a lot of farmers like to work on their equipment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good column.
Let's very quickly talk about our stocks, our weekly stock picks or not. This is a game that we play, not an offer to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation either for anything that we talk about here. John C. DeVark, myself, Horowitz Company clients may own or have some of these stocks in their portfolios. We'll duly note that as well. If you do decide to do anything with these, please do yourself a favor. Talk to a financial expert. Don't do it yourself, or just at least don't try to tell anybody that we told you to do so. It's all on you, not on us. But we had nothing come off the list this week.
No.
Your advanced emissions solutions, this insider thing that you wanted to buy twice, is up 21%.
Well, I would have been up 41%.
Exactly. Barclays up 61%. Kinder Morgan up 10%. Resolute Energy just keeps on going, up 48%. Tronc is finally catching a bid, up 2.5%. Retractable Technologies is retracting a bit. Facebook is putting a little pie on my face, down 2.5%. I was shorting that. Qualcomm up 1%. Calavo Growers, the avocados.
It's getting there.
That's avocados up 4%. And then other Walgreens up 3%. Under Armour up 1%. Macquarie Infrastructure down 1%. Now, what do you got? Anything? You got something?
Yeah, I said earlier, I want to go a momentum play with Tesla.
All right, so then
that would be the rationale, would be a momentum play. And I want a momentum play with Jack in the Box.
Which is not J-A-C-K, not really, right?
I don't know if that's it or not.
I think it's Jack.
It used to be Purina, I know, years ago.
There was a buy today. As a matter of fact, Popeyes was bought by the company that owns Burger King.
Yeah, there could be some. Yeah, the thing about Jack in the Box is they got this other kind of a Chipotle thing spinoff. I can't remember the name of it. Something stupid. But it's propping up the stock. All these fast food places look like they're moving. So let's see what I can get the symbol.
All right, sorry. So I'm going to short. It's Jack. It is Jack. I'm going to short Tesla.
Yeah.
Momo. And I'm going to say against the odds for me. Against the odds. Jack in the Box, why do you like that?
It's because they've got, because all fast food's moving, and it's a momentum play, another momentum play. Both of these are momentum, so I'm just going to do that.
Okay, got it. All right, we're going to have to end it there.
There's some insider stuff I'm looking at, but it's that's the same old stuff. I'm getting bored. I mean, one of them that looks pretty good, it's a kind of a penny stock, is a BTX, but it's one of these Broadwood Partners bought a bunch of it, but it's it's a biotech company. It's boring. And then there's a property holding company that looks pretty decent, and then pipelines. I want to try something different.
All right, well, we'll get that in there. And we're running a little bit over here, but we'll end it on that note, and I'll see you next week.
Okay, see you then.
All right.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.